I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday, the 10th of November. We're so glad you're here. We have a lot to talk to you about today, including the latest inflation numbers. They're a little depressing, but we're going to get through it.
Yeah. And we're also going to talk about the stimulus battle. What happens next? Will we see stimulus checks? Will we see those $3,600 family tax credit checks? Will we see earned income tax credit checks? All of it. Because now progressives are in a battle to try to get what they deserved after that big battle with President Biden. So we'll talk about the stimulus in just a few moments.
And there's a whistleblower talking about the trials of the COVID vaccine for Pfizer. It doesn't seem like awesome news. It's not something we want to read, but it's something we'll look into and discuss together.
Yeah. So all of that and more as Morning Invest starts right now. Good morning, everybody. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So let's start the show today in talking about inflation and some really troubling news about U.S. inflation numbers that we just got. We just got the October inflation numbers, and they are not good.
No. In fact, the inflation numbers now have risen to a 30-year high just in October. And you may know they have not come down since.
Right. And so what's included in these numbers? I mean, because this is we're talking about the consumer price index. So these are the consumables, right? These are the things that everyone is buying.
It's like 1 gallon of milk, not 12, right? The price of meat, of fruit and vegetables, just sort of the everyday staples, things that people buy. And so, yes, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that inflation hit a three-decade high as prices rose 5.9%. Now, when we did this story exactly 1 month ago, we thought we already were at a high when prices in September had gone up 4% since August. So that's 4% since August and another 5.9%. So how high can they go? Experts are saying, yeah, that's high, and we do not see a plateauing of these numbers anytime soon.
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting to look at some of the people, interviewed for this piece, and I've been going through some different economists who've been on television and some of their different commentary, and it's funny to see some of them, like, most of them agree that it's going to be here for a while.
Yes.
Like, that seems to be the consensus. Now, they're really arguing, like, how high is this going to go? Like, how long are we going to see these numbers? And I know the Federal Reserve, I know Jerome Powell thinks that it's going to be a short term. You know, he seems to think that it's going to be fast. Don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. It's going to be just very, short term, temporary inflation, but it'll pull back around the third quarter of next year. Still, that's an entire year.
That's a year from now.
Right. So that's a whole year of people having to spend a boatload of money on things and use up a huge portion of their already strapped income to pay for gas, to pay for food.
Right. Okay. So where else have we seen that number? 5.9%. Anybody? You just had the graphic up. 5.9% is also the increase of Social Security for the year, right?
Right.
So people who live on fixed income, that graphic right there, who are dependent on their Social Security checks, this means that they are retired and they are taking out payments based on their work history, right? And they are getting a cost of living increase of 5.9%. That happened in 1 month. Right?
Right.
And so...
Great point, yeah.
So maybe when this was announced at the end of August, we thought, oh, okay, that's not bad. Actually, no, that 5.9% was announced just a month ago. So you thought, that's fine. But since that time, the price of living index has wiped out your whole raise. So right. People on Social Security...
And I love this,
what
too.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? So now, great. We're seeing the biggest Social Security increase in decades.
Yes.
And it's all wiped out in one fell swoop.
In 1 month.
So according to, I love this piece. Federal Reserve officials are closely watching inflation measures to gauge whether the recent jump in prices will be temporary or lasting. One such factor is consumer expectations of future inflation, which can prove self-fulfilling. As households are more likely to demand higher wages and accept higher prices in anticipation of higher future price growth.
Okay. Well, I mean,
that one a bit.
It's just sort of me. I don't know. Well, it's nice that they can demand higher wages from who, right? So, yes, more educated and middle class people can. That does not really. And again, Social Security recipients can demand nothing. The fixed income is fixed income.
Yeah.
So, but it shows that spending is increased by 1.6% annually in the third quarter this year compared to last year. So, you know, at this time last year, we were still in some moderate lockdowns. So people weren't quite going out and buying as much, but people are buying. So prices are high and we're here for it.
You know, how much do we think the Federal Reserve is going to take care of us right now? How many of you watching right now think this guy, the Fed, are going to really be concerned about these prices for Americans right now? Because again, when inflation hits, and it's hitting hard, it helps Wall Street. Wall Street's margins are through the roof. All you need to do is look at, I was looking at something today, BlackRock, right? So we're going to talk a little bit later in the show about these striking coal workers who are demanding better wages from BlackRock at a time when BlackRock's profits are through the roof.
Yeah.
Right. But they're not increasing their wages. And all they want is like a workable wage. And so Fed Chief Jerome Powell says, we're just going to keep our eye on it. We don't think it's going to last very long. Q2, Q3 of this next year should be fine. And then, you know, inflation will return back to normal. Nothing to see here. Don't worry about it. But these numbers are going to continue to run hot, and they could run hot for years to come. And when they run hot, they help Wall Street and they hurt workers, because workers end up paying, even if it is 1 year. I mean, just think about how much this will change you for the next year in your family.
Correct.
Groceries. It's not like people are out there just buying PlayStations.
Right. And so the news, right, the sort of public discussion about it is like, oh, stock up, you know, prices are higher, we may have to buy fewer Christmas presents. But there's no real discussion about how in a family you can be conservative with your purchases, with your money, nothing, right? It's just about like prices are rising and it's good for Wall Street. Their bottom line hasn't been hurt at all. There's really no discussion about how it affects us other than just sort of the tone of in the media, like prices are high.
Yeah.
You know,
Oh, well. Prices are high.
You know, some people hurt. And then maybe we'll do some of those like public interest pieces, like the family of 12 that we did last week. CNN, right. Yeah. Where they're like, it's hard for this family. Just sort of like, we're empathetic. Nowhere in that piece was like, how can they do better? How can we all conserve? How can we maybe change our lifestyle collectively so the planet doesn't burn up? Nothing.
Here's an idea. Like, don't have 12 kids.
Well, they didn't have 12 kids.
They had 11, or they had 9 kids.
Okay, but let's not get, because they said they had a heart for adoption.
Okay.
So, okay, yeah. A lot of kids need good homes. Let's not.
Let me ask everyone in the chat who's watching right now, it's like, I mean, and by the way, Angel Baby Car says, I just looked up and it kind of, wow, they were right. Natalie does look nice this morning.
Oh, thank you.
Try to stay on topic, guys, if you can. Okay. See a lot of people saying in the chat, interesting, like what they're paying. I'd be curious, like what you guys are paying more for. Let me know in the chat what you guys are paying more for across the board. If you've noticing these different prices, Philip, are you experiencing this? Like, have you noticed like your pack of cigarettes?
I mean, yeah. Like my two cartons a week. Yeah. Right. Definitely. Like, we went grocery shopping last night, and it was just sort of like, because I had my daughter a couple extra days this week because she has some time off school and she prefers to hang out with me. But it was just like, you know, went and got some like snack stuff for her, and it was over $100 for, you know, like I could easily carry it all in one trip.
Jeez,
and so it was insane.
I mean,
look at all this, like Chantel, Penton says groceries,
meat.
Randy says rent.
Gas, definitely gas.
Yeah.
Crystal
Dragon says, yeah, everything, meat, tobacco.
I was fixating on this morning because I was looking around all of these stories about how this was reported, and nobody cares about how it affects us and how we then make changes. And I guess it's because if you're on, say, one of the national morning shows, you can't do a show saying, well, I mean, they do lots of like stretch your dollar, you know, take a pound of meat and make 3 crockpot meals into it or whatever.
Or they always do those stupid segments. Like if you watch one of the national morning shows, this mainstream media, they'll do like, you know, hope you had a wonderful Halloween. Now, what do you do with all that leftover Halloween candy? We're going to have a chef coming up a little bit later that's going to show you how to make cupcakes from your Snickers bars. Like that kind of stupid segments, you know?
He says that from experience. You have said those exact words.
How do you make some delicious alcoholic drinks with crushed up Skittles?
It's like, so stupid.
Like these are the kind, this is the kind of crap.
Yeah, French fried vodka from Arby's. Like this is the kind of crap that the mainstream media shows.
But I suppose they can't say like, hey, buy less. Let's try to conserve. Let's like, how do we then actually shrink our lives? That's better for the planet and better for the economy. And then this show's brought to you by Tide, right? I guess you cannot do that.
Right. Yeah. Grow your own vegetables in your backyard, in your garden. This show is brought to you by, you know, Kroger Foods, you know, like where you have to go to the grocery store. And I mean, they're always at opposite ends of this. Jack Dorsey, though, is upset. He's speaking about inflation, hyperinflation, and he said that he thinks it's going to go up by 13,000% this year into the next year. And he tweeted this, hyperinflation is going to change everything. It's happening. He said, well, the inflation rate of 16%, he said that 16% is possible. And he said, it's going to change everything. And he basically already said, Dorsey in a follow-up tweet noted that an inflation rate of 16% was possible in the U.S. and globally. Not everyone agreed. However, you have economists are saying there have been 62 certified hyperinflations in world history. At present, no country is experiencing hyperinflation. Jack should know better than to tweet irresponsible public statements. But he's sticking by it.
In what tone do you think he is saying that? Like, it'll change everything and it's good. We'll make some positive changes, or it's going to change everything and everybody should be afraid.
I think he's saying that it's changing everything and we should all be afraid. I think what he's saying is that, like, if you have, look, he is very, very bullish on cryptocurrency. He obviously the CEO of Square in addition to Twitter, and believes that, you know, this is the future is in cryptocurrency.
So he thinks this is an inflection point.
I think he thinks that absolutely, I think he's seeing it across the board in his payment with Square and payments and moving things to cryptocurrency. He wants to democratize Bitcoin. They want to release their own custom silicon from Square so that you could go to like squareup.com. I think that's their website, and buy a Bitcoin miner from Square that you could then mine Bitcoin at home. So that you would have access to this cryptocurrency outside of this corrupt government dollar. So I think he's very bullish on that. He's a CEO. He's a lot of people call him like the next Steve Jobs. And he's had a number of brilliant entrepreneurial companies that he's built. Think about Twitter. Think about Square. So I don't know.
Are you scared? Are you scared of inflation as an inflection point for our country?
Yeah, I am. I think because we already have a massive wage gap in the United States, right? Yeah. We already have a huge disparity between the haves and the have-nots. And when you have this runaway inflation, it only makes that worse.
Yes.
I mean, you're going to see, I mean, I don't know. Did you see the article that, I mean, here's an example, right? Look in San Francisco. Right now, people are stealing catalytic converters from cars. Do you know why? Because of all the precious metals that are inside of them. And they're selling them for a huge profit. right now. So people are going up to people's cars and stealing catalytic converters. And San Francisco Gate, San Francisco Chronicle wrote a whole article about it. And it's an epidemic. They're ripping them off from all these cars. So if you park your car outside, chances are your catalytic converter is going to be stolen.
Do EVs have catalytic converters?
No, because it's no. No.
They don't, no. Right? No. So...
Yeah. So again, another move to EVs. But again, so people are getting desperate. And if they're ripping off copper pipes out of homes, new construction homes, they're stealing, you know, they're stealing catalytic converters. I mean, this is what's happening.
I guess, you know, on the one hand, I'm always like, okay, good. This will push us away from a processed food society. Then like, okay, there won't be Twinkies. We just won't have them, you know, and that will, but that's not how this works.
No, it's, because you've got heating, like how are you going to heat your home? Like
yes.
Now the cost of heating your home goes up. Now the cost of driving your car to work goes up. It's not just about the processed
food. It's not. And so,
you know, it's not as easy as go plant some lettuce in your backyard and everything's solved.
Clearly not. Clearly not.
But again, the rich get richer. I mean, if to put it into context here, and this is the way that they place this, and this is how Jack Dorsey says, to put it into context, a $2 cup of coffee with a 2% inflation rate would cost $2.04. With hyperinflation of 1,000%, that cup would cost $22. A $3.50 gallon of milk would soar to $38. And rent on a $2,000 per month two-bedroom apartment would skyrocket to $22,000.
And again, we have to look at the cause of this, right? The government continues to issue itself more money, which floods the market, which means that there are higher prices for goods and services along with higher demand. This is not happening in a vacuum. It's not that there's no reason for this.
Right.
So...
yeah, and wages just are not keeping up with, you know, with this problem as well. So anyway, again, hyperinflation, 30-year high, unbelievable. Let's see what, if it's a 40-year high, but by the time we get the November numbers,
right.
It's going to be, you know, really scary. So.
All right, we're going to move on. But first, I want to tell you about our show sponsor at Alto IRA. Now, a lot of times people like to start investing in something inside of their IRA because it is a tax-protected account that you cannot live off in that very minute, right? And so far, it has not been easy or possible to invest in cryptocurrencies in traditional IRAs. That's where Alto IRA comes in. They are an IRA custodian that allows you to self-direct your IRA so that you can direct your investments into other things. Now, if you talk to, say, a JP Morgan Chase or a Scottrade, they'll say, oh yeah, you self-direct your current IRA. You know, our IRAs are also self-directed. That means that you are allowed to choose from a finite list of stock market-based accounts. That does not mean you can invest in whatever you want. They still have a limit. Alto IRA actually gives you real control of your own IRA. And a lot of investors are using this to take the opportunity to invest in cryptocurrency.
Me included.
Clayton included. So now you can invest in Bitcoin with your IRA. Now, remember, this is a tax-protected account. You cannot live on it until you retire anyway. If you withdraw it, you have a penalty. So it is a sort of... I don't want to say safer way, but it gives you sort of the idea that you can test the market without using money that you need to live your living expenses right in this moment. With Alto IRA, you can invest in crypto and trade it without a tax headache. No aspirin, no acetaminophen required. It really is the easy way to put crypto in an IRA. I had looked into this in our previous custodian, and they said you have to join an LLC in order to invest in crypto. It's a pain in the butt. This is easy. IRA straight into crypto gives you the freedom to succeed in this market.
And I just have to say, I signed up for Alto and set up my account in just minutes. It was super easy. So this is how I'm able to now use my self-directed IRA to buy both real estate and crypto right inside the account, tax-free, so it can grow tax-free. So instead of the IRS coming after you, now if I buy Bitcoin and then it goes up and I want to sell it, take some profits, all of those profits are tax-free.
If it is a Roth.
If it's a Roth IRA,
okay.
Exactly.
You also can have a traditional IRA with Alto IRA that is not tax-free. That will be taxed when it is... withdrawn exactly. At full maturity. You also can roll over a 401k. There are also SEP IRA options as well. If you want to use this to start to invest in crypto, there are over 80 coins available. So you don't have to just do Bitcoin or Ethereum or the popular ones. You can try out some altcoins as well. Open an Alto Crypto IRA account with as little as $10. Go to altoira.com/morning. That's altoira.com/morning. Start investing in cryptocurrency today.
Yeah, use that link. altoira.com/morning. Our thanks to them. They're really fantastic. And by the way, after I signed up and started my account, I got an email. I even said to Natalie, because I got an email message from one of their team members. It's like, hey, welcome on board. We're helping you with your transfer right now. We've already taken care of this. We sent a fax to your old custodian or to transfer. Like, I was like, wow, thank you for that customer support. So excellent stuff. Good job. Good job on those guys.
Alrighty.
All right, let's talk about some news. Let's talk about the stimulus, shall we? We've got a lot to get to here on this front. So we were told, right? And I think we could all probably believe this, right? That, hey, you're going to pass that bipartisan infrastructure bill, that $1 trillion thing, and then progressives were going to get, they were, the part of their agreement was that then they would get the Build Back Better stimulus. It would might include stimulus checks for families, for all of the elder care, health care.
Yes, new piping for toxic waterways.
All of that.
Broadband climate, to rural areas.
Climate change.
Child tax credit in perpetuity. All of those things are in the Build Back Better bill. Progressives, who weren't super thrilled about the infrastructure bill, voted along with the Democrats because they were absolutely promised that if you pass this one, we will pass the other one too. They cared a bit less about the infrastructure bill. They care a lot more about the Build Back Better human stimulus plan. Now, Democrats are saying, okay, we promised you, we will pass this. They can't guarantee that, but they're saying we can guarantee that. Why would any politician fall for it?
I know.
When
they got screwed over before. So
but
back
now in- what they're saying is, okay, we are going to do it. We're going to send it to the Congressional Budget Office and get new numbers on it. And then based on that, first of all, they don't know what those numbers are going to be. So how can they guarantee that that's going to be fine? What if that those numbers are a big bomb, a big like blow up inside what they thought was awesome? They're still going to go forward. So they promised something. This might surprise you, but politicians promise something they cannot promise.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely shocking. So progressives right now are about to get screwed. They were told, hey, if you vote for the bipartisan infrastructure bill, we will, of course, go along with the other bill, the stimulus package that could send checks out to families. Like, we will bring that to the floor. And yes, you will get these things in there, including health, dental, vision, all of that stuff. We're going to take care of you. Well, now it looks like that might not happen. And there's some real warning signs. First of all, timing. Like, we're just up against a calendar. That's the big issue. We're just up against a calendar problem right now.
Yes.
Running out of time. We got Thanksgiving. We got Thanksgiving recess into Christmas recess. We also have a massive, massive government shutdown budget problem looming over the next few weeks.
Yes.
That is priority number one. And so Build Back Better might not happen at all.
I still have been playing the odds at this at less than 50%. So who was it?
Pramaya Jayapal. She's on the Progressive Caucus. She was on Rachel Maddow's show last night.
And she said, oh, no, we believe them. They told us, they promised it's going to happen. And I thought, lady, I got a bridge to sell you if this is what you believe.
Yeah, I mean, she's like, yeah, they and AOC, the same thing. Like, these progressives, like, I don't know what, you know, what they, I don't know what they're smoking, but they're about to get screwed. Listen to how Rachel Maddow puts it. By the way, if you're watching this at home and you think, is the audio not synced properly? This is the only version that we could get here. So it's a little off the audio of her lips. So just deal with it. Okay. But don't type in the chat and say the audio's misaligned.
Close your eyes for a second.
Just
we'll
close
tell
your
you
eyes.
When to open yeah. them.
What happened with the passage of this bill on Friday? We have been talking for weeks, if not months, I think weeks at least, about you wanting to pass, you and the Progressive Caucus wanting to pass the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better bill together. One of them went yep. without the other in exchange for a promise. How strong yep. is that promise?
Well, Rachel, first of all, 5 weeks ago, there was no Build Back Better bill. There was no negotiated agreement between the two senators that you mentioned, Manchin and Sinema, and the White House and the House. There was no text. there was no vote to move the bill forward before the final vote at the end. And as you know, the Progressive Caucus stood up strong, not once, not just once, but twice, to make sure that that didn't that we didn't pass the infrastructure bill without the Build Back Better bill. And we made a tremendous amount of progress. Now, what happened on Friday is that we were all set to pass both bills. And at the last minute, there were six Democrats who said that they needed more fiscal information from the Congressional Budget Office and that they needed a little bit more time. And I'll tell you, Rachel, our members of the Progressive Caucus were so strong, they were willing to continue to hold it up. But we had a caucus-wide discussion, and we decided that what we needed to do was to show momentum by passing the infrastructure bill, but if and only if we got an absolute rock-solid agreement from the six that they would vote for this bill as soon as the Congressional Budget Office got that information to them, but no later than next week.
Okay, wait. They said they'd vote for it, but they wanted more information, but they would vote for it no matter what the information is.
Exactly. Right, so that makes a lot of sense, right? So we're waiting for the Congressional Budget Office to sign off on, like, how is this going to be fiscally responsible or solvent, right? They're going to give us these numbers, like how we're going to pay for this.
But even if it's not.
So it doesn't matter. Like, this, that's why this is all just like political theater, right? We can't pay for it. It's actually going to put us further into debt. Fine. Well, we said we were going to vote for it, so we're going to vote for it. But by the way, as the CB, as we noted yesterday or a few days ago here on the show, the Congressional Budget Office might not even be able to hit that timeline. I mean, they might not have these numbers by this week. And it could even be until December before they have these numbers.
Yeah, it's not just a matter of running into the spreadsheet, right? I mean,
we're up against a government shutdown problem on December 3rd. And we also have a calendar of recess by they're going on vacation for Christmas. So good luck getting this thing through. Progressives basically rolled over. So their reasoning is we had a caucus-wide meeting and decided that, you know what, Joe Biden needed this momentum right now. So they lost. I mean, the bottom line is they lost.
Yes.
They lost the argument. They rolled over for the moderates in their party, these corporate Democrats, and the progressives got their hat handed to them. And at this point, I don't know that they're going to get an infrastructure bill or stimulus passed at all.
Even Rachel Maddow's like, why are you holding that bone, lady? Because, you know,
and she agreement that we finally agreed to. I believe, and I'll tell you, they made a commitment to me one-on-one. They made a written statement. They also made a commitment to the president that they did not believe that any information would change substantially from what had already been provided and that we would pass the bill next week. And, negotiation is always tough, but there's a moment where you just have to decide whether it is going to get you close enough to what the original prize was. And what was the original prize? It was to pass the Build Back Better Act through the House.
Okay, so let's be clear. Let's hold her to her word, progressives. Next week, they're going to pass the Build Back Better.
It's Wednesday.
Yeah.
We're halfway through, so.
We have no framework. We don't even know what's in it.
We have no CBO numbers. It's hump day, lady.
When is Thanksgiving?
It's next week, isn't it?
Is Thanksgiving next week? No. Is Thanksgiving next week already?
It's the week after next. Oh.
Uh-oh. I better get that turkey ordered.
Start my brine. What? No. Today is the 11th.
Today's the
11th. I have 2 weeks.
Okay, you have 2 weeks.
I have 2 weeks until.
But aren't they going on vacation? I don't even know when they go on vacation, but they're on recess. So they're next week, we're going to hold you to it. This is when you're going to get the stimulus through. Okay, we'll believe it when we see it. But I love the idea, though, that they told me face to face. Like, it's not like a binding contract.
I know. And she's like, they signed something. I'm like, what, a napkin? Like, she's like, look, here's the napkin pitch.
Yeah, we signed something. Good for you.
They
good
pinky
you.
Promised.
Pinky promise. We made it. Oh, boy. So we'll keep our eye on that story. I want to talk about what's going on in the the vaccine mandate issue, we're seeing a lot of craziness right now. First of all, if we just kind of focus on what's happening in Washington with the vaccine mandates, there's a deadline approaching also. I think it's December, is it December 10th for the vaccine mandates?
For federal employees, I believe, and January 4th for private businesses under 100. And just this week, that continued in the federal appeals court, and the federal government is maintaining that they do in fact have the authority to issue vaccine mandates thusly.
But a lot of workers are saying we're not going to take it. And so you have a lot of healthcare workers, you have a lot of federal workers, you have a lot of members of the military that's saying that they're not going to do it. So President Biden has an issue on his hand, especially if they're trying to hold to their guns that this is the way. This is the only way.
Most court challenges of the vaccine mandate have gone the way of the employer trying to enforce it. So most employees who have challenged losing their jobs for a vaccine mandate have not been successful. Only today in the newsletter is the first one that I'm aware of is a judge in Maricopa County, Arizona, ruled that the colleges there cannot enforce vaccine requirements for nursing students. Mm. And that did surprise me because usually that's not how this has been going.
Yeah, and there is precedent, obviously, as we talked about here on the show before about going back to smallpox. Mm-hmm. There is precedent for states being able to enforce mandates all the way back to smallpox vaccine. So there's a big story this morning. And here's another story you will not see covered in the mainstream media. No one will touch this story. Good luck trying to find much information about it online.
So are we crazy to touch this story? Because I don't want to get our show.
No, that's the thing. We've got this is a true story. I mean, this is a fact. We're going to cover the story and, you know, whatever. Be damned if we get hurt for it. But we're going to cover the story. And the story is this. A Pfizer whistleblower. And this is according to the BMJ investigation. You can read about it at BMJ.com. A COVID whistleblower, a Pfizer whistleblower, has blown the whistle on data integrity on Pfizer's vaccine trials. Now, this is absolutely a bombshell of a story, because what it says is that during the trials, basically, Pfizer fudged results. And let's go through it exactly what it says here.
Well, they unblinded the study, mm-hmm. right? So a vaccine trial should be blind, meaning you give Clayton and I something and neither of us know which one got it. And then we see how our bodies react, right? So somehow they let the participants know whether they got the placebo or not. That's not how that's supposed to work.
Right.
They also asked people to administer the vaccine who were not qualified to do so. What are some of the other things it says?
This is amazing. So, but for researchers who were testing Pfizer's vaccine at several sites in Texas during that autumn period, speed may have come at the cost of data integrity and patient safety. A regional director who was employed at the research organization Ventavia Research Group has told the BMJ that the company falsified data, unblinded patients, employed inadequately trained vaccinators. Okay, so these people weren't even trained to do it properly, and was slow to follow up on adverse events reported in Pfizer's pivotal phase 3 trial. Staff who conducted quality control checks were overwhelmed by the volume of problems that they were finding. How does that sit with you? They were overwhelmed by the volume of problems.
Not at all surprising. Because I just finished the book Dope Sick about the creation of OxyContin and how it was injected into our society in an irresponsible way. And when OxyContin was first given its clinical trials, they self-selected out people who had adverse reaction and just threw them out of their trial. And the FDA knew that. They have to write down what they do in their reports, right? The FDA knows this and they're like, that's fine. And that drug has now killed almost as many people as HIV, OxyContin, and specifically the opioid epidemic. So I am not at all surprised that this happens. I'm just sad that we think that the FDA is something that it's not, right?
I mean, it's just apps. I mean, think about, so now we're administering this stuff to children. I mean, you know, again, so they were lying to us. They were lying to us about the results and pushing this through. Basically, they're saying that this was speed over science.
Now, we are not making the leap that then the COVID vaccine is not effective, or we're not saying that. We're not saying either way. What we're saying is that, I mean, remember just 2 weeks ago, we did a story about how Pfizer, was it Pfizer? No.
I don't know.
Johnson & Johnson. Sorry. It was Johnson & Johnson. How they broke up their company so they couldn't get sued over toxins and baby powder, right?
Right.
So we already know that pharmaceutical companies are shady.
Right.
And so...
And they have Congress. I mean, they have Congress bought and paid for.
Absolutely, you know? Right. And look, so this is just more proof that these companies that we are putting our faith in with our health and our pandemic and our ability to survive it are not the upstanding citizens that we pretend they are. And we cannot, as much as I want to, right? Because I am a recipient of the Pfizer vaccine. I cannot say like, oh, I don't want to think that about this company. I trust them. So then I won't look at this other, right? It's just, we can't do that.
So Ventavia, which is the, they call itself the largest privately owned clinical research company in Texas, and lists many of its, and lists many awards it has won for its contract work. But the whistleblower told BMJ that during the 2 weeks she was employed at Ventavia in September 2020 during these trials for Pfizer's vaccine, she repeatedly informed her superiors of poor laboratory management, patient safety concerns, data integrity issues. Jackson was a trained clinical trial auditor who had previously held a director of operations position. She has 15 years experience in clinical research coordination. She was exasperated that they weren't dealing with the problems. And she documented several matters late one night, taking photos on her mobile phone. One photo shows needles discarded in plastic biohazard bags instead of in of a Sharps container box. Another showed vaccine packaging materials with trials participants' identification numbers written on them left wide out in the open, potentially unblinding participants. It went on and on and on. And she said that the unblinding may have occurred at a far wider scale than they thought. According to the trial's design, unblinded staff were responsible for preparing and administering the study drug or their placebo. This was to be done to preserve the blinding of trial participants and all the other staff. So this was like much bigger than maybe she had even initially thought it was.
So this is BMJ.com is a medical journal.
Right.
Okay. So the question then becomes, is this admissible in a court of law when you are fighting for your right to be an unvaccinated person?
Right.
And so for the labor unions that are fighting up for their right to choose whether to be vaccinated or not, for not Aaron Rodgers, who cares about him, for, let's see, anybody, right, who's a nurse who loses their job, for anybody who doesn't want to vaccinate their child now, can this be used as data? It does not seem circumstantial. It seems like actual evidence to say, I have the right to not want to take this vaccine, and here is some proof. And so now, I mean, I see this will be data, and I do think this is going to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, on the mandate question. I mean, this is huge. And again, then you have the question of, like, okay, so now, you know, and their profits are taken, you know, exploding. Pfizer's profits,
yes,
just soaring, because now they're going to roll out a pill form of this and all this. And now, of course, the question about children, right? So now we know that children, was it 5 to 11, are getting these things now? And we now we have overwhelming studies about how extremely low risk children getting COVID is. Confirmed by studies. Even the New York Times, of all things, published a story this week talking about how children basically don't need this. Like, don't need it. You know, I mean, the data from the first 12 months of the pandemic in England shows only 25 under 18 year olds died from COVID. And those were people with multiple chronic illnesses, neurodisabilities were most at risk.
Okay, we're not being insensitive, though. That's 25 people too many. Still, you know, we are parents of children who had COVID, and our three children had it too, and they had no symptoms. And I do feel now like I'm less scared in the world of them moving about because they have antibodies, and less anxious to vaccinate them.
Right. Exactly. Because they had it, because they were infected.
Because they've had it specifically recently. Right. I may feel differently about this in 6 months.
And we may have, by the time, you know, as many doctors point out, how, you know, data takes, these vaccines, they take a long time to get, you know, a lot of data on. And you know, we need that time to do that. So
yes,
we just don't have, I mean, it hasn't been that long yet. So anyway.
Well, I think this is like backward science in the pharmaceutical industry, because it's highly incentivized to get a result. And that is just automatically a problem with the scientific process, because if like science should be working where like you're trying to see what happens, not how do we get to this end point? Because then like when you're starting it out trying to get to that end point, and it's highly incentivized that you do, then you're going to get the sort of like fudging of data that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because it's not just a for-profit system, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it. I mean, it's happened multiple times where they'll have these big scientific breakthroughs in like the molecular or virology world, and then it comes to find out that it was a lot of the data was falsified and not repeatable because of that incentivization.
And Philip speaks from a place of experience on this. You were a molecular biologist, right?
I majored in molecular biology. Yes. Yeah. I wouldn't say I was a molecular biologist, because I never actually worked as one, because I decided I hated lab work.
Yeah. Well, and I'll just put a button on this, you know, and you want to wonder how do we make a change, right? Natalie was saying this last night. We were talking about that book, Dope Sick, and we were talking about Appalachia and the opioid crisis in the country. Like, this is what we were talking about by the fire last night.
Well, I finished the book and I was specifically upset about the complicity of the American government and the FDA at its role of injecting opioids into specifically white, poor neighborhoods, urban white, poor neighborhoods, how it affects children. How specifically there is no regulation for rehab and no national agreement. So there's a lot of research that shows that what's called MAT, which is medically assisted treatment, helps opioid addicts, which means that you give them regular doses of something
and wean them
so
off
that
of
they
it.
Can wean off. Now, a lot of people are like, no, we should give them nothing. They should just, but that is more dangerous. Then they go out and get AIDS, HIV, they get beat up. They enter sex work in order to pay for this addiction. And even so, there's no national agreement. Even though there is data about the efficacy of MAT, we still don't. And they can't go to AA because AA believes that, like, you must be clean, you should have nothing, right? So they're sort of stigmatized there. And a lot of them can't afford medical insurance. When they actually decide they want help, they have to pay like $12,000 rehabs when the rehab is not standard. So you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know if it's a good rehab or a bad rehab. You don't know if it has MAT. Only a third of them have it now. And so many of them depend on Medicaid, which you, if you're hanging on to your life and Medicaid is your only answer, you're really screwed. And it's affected so many people that, remember the study I was telling you last night, was it 1 in 3 or 1 in 4?
1 in 4.
1 in 4 children in Appalachia is raised by a non-parent. And that is astounding.
And
96% of adoptions are not orphans. It's just children that social services have taken. And I want to cry just saying it, because look what we're doing. You know, we can't help these people.
But they can help them in other countries, right? We were specifically talking about Portugal.
Yeah.
Here's Portugal. That's Porto. And what did that country do? Basically eliminated drug crime. Made it legal and set up centers to treat people.
Yes, treatment instead of punishment. And now it has the lowest addiction rate in all of Europe. That's not Portugal. And
even better than France.
Yes. Portugal does. And yes, the lowest usage and the lowest addiction rates. And what was my follow-up point about that?
About Portugal?
Not about Portugal.
Just about 1 in 4 parents. Was that?
Yes, Medicaid. I can't remember now.
Medicaid, parents, but it is awful. Think about that. I lived in West Virginia, and I would see that all the time. I would see grandparents taking care of these children. You know,
yes.
And where's the parent? Oh, the parent is either dead from a drug overdose or in jail. Mm-hmm. You know, because of opioid addiction.
Yes.
And I did a whole series on OxyContin addiction when I lived there, and it was awful. These people who just get on it for back pain, and they're just so quick to prescribe it, because the whole industry makes just absolute gallons of money. And we were talking, well, how do you fix this? It's very difficult when you've got people like Kyrsten Sinema, who are paid millions of dollars by the pharmaceutical industry, keeps this entire cycle going inside of the government. You know, all of these guys, they make money hand over fist. No wonder she fought. She fought, you know, the whole drug pricing plan so that, now, you know, hey, you want to pay lower prescription drugs? Sorry. Kyrsten Sinema is there to make sure you're paying as much as you can.
And one of the stories we did last week was about how the FBI and the CIA was so excited about this big opioid arrest. But that's like a starfish. You can cut off a limb, but it grows right back. There's always someone willing to, because the money is so good in selling these opioids, that's not going to work. Unfortunately, this is a strange sort of little side topic, but dealers sometimes are African American, but users are not. Users of opioids are mostly white. And the data shows it's because doctors don't trust Black people with strong opioids, so they don't prescribe them.
That's crazy.
And so then they therefore don't get addicted. So the data shows that this is like racism that worked in their favor, because they're less likely to become opioid addicting. It's crazy to think of this, right?
You know, that's going to be a talking point on like conservative radio or conservative television. Like, see, racism.
Racism's good for you. You don't have an opioid addiction.
Next on PragerU.
Right. Yeah.
Next on Newsmax.
It's how crazy, right?
I can see that. You know, next on Newsmax, how racism is good for you.
So these are the kinds of things we're reading over on Goodreads. Thank you to everyone who friended me over the last few days as I've been talking about it. I'm goodreads.com/Natalie Morris, and it's N-A-T-A-L-I, no E. And I love your comments on books. So you don't have to just follow me. I'm available for friends. You can friend me too.
And I got a lot of friends over there too. A lot of people friended me on Goodreads.
We're not talking about you. We're talking about me.
Talk about me. Talk about me. All right. We got more news to get to here on the show in a moment. I want to talk about what's going on with these mine workers. And we're going to do what's trending today. We're going to talk about Brian Williams at NBC and Prince William and a bunch of others.
Don't give it away.
Okay. I won't.
All right. You do your bit.
But first, I want to tell you about our show sponsor, our friends at Morris Invest. Yes. We're talking about inflation, right? And inflation is obviously running away. Well, wouldn't you like to be able to invest in something like real estate that is an absolute hedge against inflation? It's the ultimate hedge against inflation. Brand new construction, rental real estate, all done for you. Yes, this is our company. We've been running this company for many, many years, building along with our team, building over 500 properties, brand new construction properties. And what do? Well, our team builds brand new construction properties in the best rental markets in the country. And then with our property management teams that we work with, place tenants in those properties. And before you even close on the property, it's cash flowing in the best school districts in our markets in the country, with huge, vaulted ceilings. Let me just take a look. Here's one of our duplexes. So we do single families and duplexes. These are single family there from ground up construction, brand new. And right there, that is one of our duplexes. And we have a waiting list right now because they are in such demand. And the internal rate of return, that includes financing, because we work with banks, so you can keep your money in your pocket and get incredibly low interest rates. Right now you can get it's like 2%, 3% interest rates right now, traditional financing. So all you need to do is put down a down payment and the bank finances the rest. And the internal rate of return, 17 to 20% right now. Internal rate of return, IRR. 17 to 20% internal rate of return. That's why it's the ultimate hedge against inflation. That's why I love it. And so when I talk about crypto investing or gold and silver, I use those profits in order to buy real estate. Small profits turn into larger buy and hold. So anyway, come over to Morris Invest, the website right there on your screen, morrisinvest.com, and click on the free book a call button, and then a little calendar will pop up. If you want to book a free call with our team, one of our team members will get on the phone and help you figure out your financial freedom number and walk you through that whole process. Very, very simple to do. So go to morrisinvest.com right there on your screen and click on the book a call button. We've got all kinds of blog articles and reviews. You can check out all of the reviews over 70% of our clients are repeat customers. They buy another house, another house, another house. So come on over and check it out. All right. So there you go.
Okay. We want to tell you about this story before we move on to what's trending. The strike in Alabama of mine workers continues, and they have moved into New York City and are protesting at the owner of their company over at BlackRock. Recently, striking miners were arrested in New York City outside BlackRock headquarters, and the company continues to say that they cannot meet the demands of these workers. Specifically, what they're asking for is to be made right on 2016 contracts, and the company says, no, can do, also get off my lawn.
Right. So they get arrested. So they go to New York City, and they're saying, hey, we've been striking now for 8 months.
Yes.
You know, 8 months. And we just want better wages. I've got black lung, Pop.
I got, you know, the black lung, Pop.
I'm dying because of the work that I do for you. And I'm sitting here, and these guys literally was sitting there with black lung in New York demanding better wages. And meanwhile, it's funny to hear like Joe Manchin, right, who talks about how his state and the people in Appalachia and the coal workers are doing just fine.
Yes.
And they're well paid and well taken care of. Really? Well, the mainstream media is not covering this story at all. You will not see it on NBC News. You'll not see it on CNN. You won't see it on Fox. The mainstream media is ignoring these strike stories. It is really remarkable. And let's listen to a couple of these mine workers as they, let me see if I can pull up their sound here. Listen to this.
Yeah, you tell me why it's fair for some, you know, somebody like BlackRock to make, you know, millions or billions, and then the people that mine the coal be sick and dying with black lung.
I've been diagnosed with black lung. I've actually been examined 5 times, and I've still not received any benefits. We've had a lot of retirees that's died off that never received any federal black lung benefits that died deserving that. And the system seems to be broken. It doesn't work for all miners.
If you do not cooperate and accompany the arresting officer to the prisoner transport vehicle, or if you resist arrest, you may be charged with additional crimes.
Over this last 5 years, our members have given up $1.1 billion in concessions to this company, to these Wall Street firms. And they've taken that money out of Central Alabama, taken it out of our members' families, taken it out of our communities, and brought it up here to where they really don't need it that much, right? They've already got billions of dollars floating around here. So I do know that if Larry Fink, who is the CEO of BlackRock, picks up the phone and calls the CEO of Warrior Met and say, hey, what's going on here? Let's solve this problem. Warrior Met's going to listen.
Just heartbreaking. I mean, these guys, you know, they're like,
how are you going to arrest that? It's peaceful.
Yeah.
And it's not nothing for them to come from Alabama. Look, they chartered these buses. They're taking time away from their family. They're freezing. You know, they have the right to be heard.
Yeah. 8 months they've been asking for better wages. 8 months, you know. And you know, Kristen Swenson in our chat says, my aunt died at 55 from black lung. It was from the secondary soot that her father brought home in his clothes from working in a coal mine. You know, this is so sad. As Selena Wilder says, this is so sad. None of the media outlets are talking about this. Yeah, none of them. Because you know why? Because these media outlets are run by Wall Street. They are billion-dollar companies. And this goes against their narrative that these billion-dollar companies like BlackRock that all funnel money and advertising over to the main networks, CNN, MSNBC. They spend this money to pump advertising onto those channels. They can't cover these stories, how their workers are dying. You know, why didn't no one cover the Amazon strike? No one covered the Amazon strike. You know why? Because Amazon donates millions of dollars to political candidates and to media organizations. That's why they don't cover these stories.
Yeah.
You know, it's literally Google is, and it's hard to find any information about it. There's like very few publications that are covering it. Why isn't the New York Times? This is literally down the street from the New York Times headquarters. Why is the Wall Street Journal not covering this story? It's right there around the corner.
Maybe if they were making a consumable, it'd be like, oh, you can't get your Nike shoes or whatever, right?
Right.
But no, it's easy for us to ignore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. It's so sad. Well,
these people are mining the fuels that we need to survive based on the economy as we have it.
Yeah, currently have it. Like, and by the way, we're increasing the amount of coal production. Well, and we should actually be reducing it. And we've been hearing about how we're going to, you know, clean coal, right? Clean, all of this extraction methods are now clean and these workers are taken care of. Yeah, and they're dying of black lung. They're taken care of. No problems here. Nothing to see here.
Coal miners, Philip, have been fighting. Oh, I was going to say, coal miners have been fighting this fight since, like, they've been around. And so, you know, it's like, it's far back as, like, I can't remember the actual, like, dates. You were a history major. Maybe you know. But, like, there were, like, essentially, like, union-supported government-backed death squads that were, like, forcing coal workers to go back to work. And this was in, like, I want to say it was around the turn of the century.
Yeah, 1902 in Pennsylvania. I mean, I grew up hearing about this and the famous 1902 coal strike in Pennsylvania by the United Mine Workers. I mean, these are the same guys, the UMA. Yeah. They're still fighting for this. 120 years later, they're still fighting for this stuff. I mean, it's like, at what point do you say, okay, you know, I don't know. At what point do you give up? Or we have to demand some sort of a root change. I don't know, but 120 years you're begging for this. It's really, really sad.
Now, right. Maybe somebody else knows, cause I don't actually know this right off, but I know that, there are like dock workers that in a national crisis, basically the government can say, you can't strike. You have to go back to work because our nation depends on you. I wonder, are coal workers, do they fall into that where they can actually be like forced by the government to go back to work?
I don't know the answer to that, but I know what you're talking about. I don't know if that's like airlines. I forget what.
I definitely not, know yeah, that. I definitely know that dock workers can't, because that was when they did the actual government shutdown. What was that, like 8 years ago or something like that? The dock workers, they couldn't be furloughed because they had to be working, and so it was just like they basically, the government said, no, you have to work without pay. Sorry.
Well, I do know, you know, that there is obviously. It's illegal for you to join up with other striking parties like they can do in other countries, like a general strike. It's like illegal to have a general strike. Isn't that amazing? Like in Norway, as we reported, or in I think it was Finland. I forget what country it was. No, it was the Netherlands when McDonald's came there. And all of the other organizations around were like, oh, you're not going to pay these salaries to these McDonald's workers? Okay. Well, then the truckers in the town, the dock workers, if it was McDonald's, they wouldn't unload it. The truckers all got together like, oh, we're not driving that there. The paper products companies, like every one of them, the people that printed the cups, the paper napkins, like everything, they're all like, sorry, we're just going to sit back. You want to figure out how you're going to pay these people? And then McDonald's like, okay, we'll pay you $22 an hour and benefits, and we'll take care of you. And then wouldn't you know, suddenly the truckers started moving again and paper products started getting printed again. You can't do that in the United States. That's illegal. You can't all join together and have a strike. Mm. That's the United States. All right. So let's talk about what's trending today.
Okay. I did want to address just one thing that I saw in the chat, though, because I'm sorry, I can't remember who said it. I try and like write down who says these things, but the chat scrolls up and I forget. It was someone who gave a Facebook comment who asked about pain management and how you actually become addicted and how this happened more during the Obama years. You are absolutely right. And this book that I have been mentioning, and now there's a Michael Keaton miniseries on, yes, that one, Lorna Hamilton says, what is considered addiction? Because people have to go to pain management clinics. So oxycodone and its sort of brethren of drugs was originally used for end of life care. And when it was developed, Purdue Pharmacy had these nonsense trials that they went out to doctors and said, look, it's really like it's hardcore stuff, but only less than 1% of people get addicted, which was absolutely false. Most people get addicted to those. And when you start to come off of that, you get diarrhea, you get cold sweats, you get fatigue, you get seizing pain in your body. But they, for some reason, felt fine that they could go and say that. And they pummeled money into doctors. They would, you know, go to doctors and give them free trips to Florida, you know, prescribe this thing. And it was at a time when doctors were starting to really worry about allowing patients to feel pain. And they started to put those charts up on the doctor's wall, like, what's your pain? And they have like the frowny face and then the neutral face and then the happy face emoji. And people were saying, I can't deal with this amount of pain. And so doctors felt like they were getting bad reviews online because people still felt pain from their disease. So the doctors didn't want to get sued or get like dumped on because their patients were feeling pain because they were taking more appropriate things like Tylenol. And they were being lied to and they were being treated to free trips. So all of this contributed, because it's legal, and it contributed to the dumping of opioids and overprescription. So people will like pull a tooth on purpose so that they can then go to the doctor and say, I need it. Or one person said they even faked an ankle injury and went through with a surgery to get a prescription. Like, people will do things because it feels so awful to come off of it. So this is a really good comment about like people who need the medication now are punished because too many people who don't feel sick because they've been prescribed it when they shouldn't have. One woman tells a story of like her daughter got a gymnastics injury, went to the ER, they had no break, they took x-rays, and she still got an opioid, and the mother had already lost a child to opioids, and she was like, I'm throwing this away. How dare you give this to a teenage girl for a sprained ankle, a wrist, or whatever. So there are so many structural reasons that built this like pile of poop. And you're absolutely right. It has to do with like legit pain management versus profit-based pain management. Okay.
Yeah. Cindy says, one day you guys should do an entire show that reports only the good news.
Okay. Yes, we should.
I saw a rainbow the other day.
No, there is that in the world. There's a great Instagram, Good News Network.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should pull from there sometimes and just show it to you.
Hey, by the way, we started off the show today by showing you puppies.
Yes.
Yes. So we did start with puppies. Yes. We started with puppies. And then we got to talk about addiction.
And you get a break from us. Remember, we are off Thursday, Friday, and next Monday. So we'll come back and bum you out next Tuesday. So yeah. Hopefully you'll be recovered by then.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about what. Sorry. Go ahead.
Real quick, for any Reddit users out there, there's always the subreddit iBleach. And that's a good one, just for like every now and then, just open up iBleach, and it's just pictures of dogs and cats. The idea is it'll just cleanse your mind of all the bad news.
Okay. iBleach.
All right. Well, we're going to tell you some fun news in trending today. Okay. 2 minutes. Prince Harry is trending because His Royal Highness says that Megxit is a misogynistic term that was created by the press, and he doesn't like it. He said other things too. He was on a panel for Wired, and specifically he was talking about the more destructive nature of the media. He did say something that was more clever than the Megxit thing. He said that a lot of times truthful media is behind a paywall, and lying type crazy fake news is not, and that he doesn't think that that's right. Hmm. So that's
he might be right about that.
It's interesting to note. Yeah. Brian Williams is trending because the news anchor announced that he is leaving NBC after 28 years. He says it is, quote, to spend time with his family. This is his formal announcement. Do you want to play it?
Yeah, we can play a little bit.
Okay.
The old song says, we got a thing going on. Think about it. We've been meeting this way at this same time, this same place for an awful long while, 5 years, give or take. Next year is my 40th year in the business. The earth was still cooling, in fact, when I started as a reporter. And so that got me to thinking, and that led me to write something that we made public earlier tonight. And in case you missed it or demanded a dramatic reading, here it is, and it reads like this. Following much reflection and after 28 years with the company, I have decided to leave NBC upon the completion of my current contract in December. I have been truly blessed. I have been allowed to spend almost half my life with one company. NBC is a part of me and always will be. 28 years, 38 countries, 8 Olympic Games, 7 presidential elections, half a dozen presidents, a few wars, and one SNL. Good friends were in great supply at NBC. I was fortunate that everyone I worked with made me better at my job. I have had the best colleagues imaginable. That includes great bosses. I was on the air for the launch of MSNBC. My return years later was my choice, as was launching the 11th hour that I'm as proud of as the decade I spent anchoring nightly news. I wanted it to be called the 11th hour as it was late in the 2016.
Wow. Okay. All right, man. Nothing like saying goodbye and like prattling on and on and on and on.
I know. I've done a lot.
He mentioned like seven presidents, multiple wars. He was shot down multiple times over Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, never mind. That was made up.
Oh, right, right. Yes, someone in the chat points out that he was demoted because he told a false narrative about
a
that.
A bunch of them.
Which is interesting because in this goodbye, he says, I went to MSNBC and it was my choice. And it was like, no, you were demoted. We remember.
We remember you being taken off of nightly news.
Why put that in there? By the way, it was my choice.
My choice.
And it's his choice now, we're led to believe. So who knows? Welcome to retirement, Brian Williams.
All right.
Happy 246th and hashtag Marine Corps birthday is trending because the U.S. Marines celebrate the birthday of their division of the military every year on November 10th. This commemorates the day in 1775 when the organization was established by the Second Continental Congress.
Yeah, before they're older than the United States of America.
Do you say Semper Fi or Semper Fi?
Semper Fi.
Okay. That
I don't say it because I'm not a Marine, but they Semper Fi.
But you can say it like to a Marine
it's short for Semper Fidelis.
Yes. Can Semper you Fidelis. Say it if you're not Fidelis. A Marine to another Marine as a greeting?
No, I think. Well, I don't know.
For them to say together.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you can say it to them, but they may not appreciate it. So it's mostly a.
Like if I would say that to a Marine, like they'd hey, be Semper Fi, they'd be like,
you're a douche.
Yeah, they're like, get out of here.
Okay. I won't say it. I'm not a Marine. Malala is trending because human rights advocate and Nobel Peace Prize winner Malala Yousafzai, that's not how you say it, Yousafzai, was married in England on Tuesday. She's only 24. A little young to get married, but okay. She looks just beautiful. Her husband is named Asr Malik.
And he looks like he's 80.
No, that's her dad.
I'm joking.
Oh, her husband is the one in the middle in the three-piece suit. He is a manager of a Pakistani cricket governing body. I didn't know those things existed.
Okay, maybe 24 might be young for some people, but she's lived an entire lifetime already. You know what I mean?
I'm just protective of her. Like, you sure you want to do that, girl? But she seems so happy. And look, put the one with the fall colors is so beautiful. The wedding was in England on Tuesday. And
pretty.
Yeah.
And here's other ones I see.
There's lots there. Oh, and so you can go on Twitter if you'd like and wish her a happy marriage. It's lovely. Okay. And finally, Jim Jones is trending because there is news that Leonardo DiCaprio is in talks to play the evangelical cult leader in a movie about the... Why are you saying yes? I'm talking about the Jonestown Massacre.
Because
you don't say yes to that. You say no.
No, I would.
Yes,
first of all,
to the Jonestown Massacre.
Yes, yes to the Jonestown Massacre.
No, yes to a movie about that. I guess that's
yes.
your speed.
Well, and that Leonardo DiCaprio is going to play it. Yes.
Okay, this is a rumor, but people like this on Twitter.
Now, I read a book. I'm trying to find it. Jonestown, Jim Jones, Jonestown. Remember I read a book on...
You did read a whole book about this. This is what you can find on Clayton's Goodreads.
On my Goodreads, you'll find find stories about this or books that I'm reading about this. But, Julia Sheris. I read her book and I actually interviewed her then on a podcast I did at the time. It's called 1,000 Lives, The Untold Story of Jonestown. An excellent book. Really, really riveting. Just stunning. And of course, that's where the, don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Oh, yes.
Term comes from what happened to all those people that drink. It actually turns out it was not Kool-Aid. It was like a cheap knockoff of Kool-Aid. So can you imagine that, like, Kool-Aid's brand forever tarnished by people drinking.
And no one died from that Kool-Aid.
Right.
Yeah,
it wasn't actually Kool-Aid. It was like a knockoff brand of Kool-Aid that people died from. I forget the name of it, but.
Well, you still shouldn't really drink Kool-Aid. It's full of sugar.
Okay. Never mind the fact that it's also laced with whatever they put in
cyanide or whatever.
Yeah. And sugar. But the cyanide will kill you. Sugar, it's just like a slow poison.
Okay. Did Jim Jones actually die in that massacre too? Because remember the Heaven's Gate one, the leaders didn't do it, right? Or which one of them? There's some of them where the leaders don't do it in the mass suicide.
I don't know.
I thought maybe it was Heaven's Gate. Heaven's Gate was the Nikes, right?
Yeah, where they all laid on the bed and they thought it was the Hale-Bopp comet.
And they were, yes. And they also, oh, okay. We just got some news on the Semper Fi. Semper Fi. It's only for present and retired Marines. So I will not use it.
Yeah, so don't say
it. Or get a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Okay.
James Figueroa says he watched Finch the other night. Good, good, good. We watched that with our kids. Yeah. Heaven's Gate. That's it.
Heaven's Gate. That was the, that was the Nike one.
Yeah.
Was that Reverend Moon?
Heaven's Gate? I don't know. It's a different one.
And did they die? For some reason, I thought that they didn't. Like they meant to and they didn't do it. I don't remember.
Well, I don't know. We'll get to the bottom of this. But thank you, everyone, for joining us on this Wednesday. We're going to wrap things up now. We've got an interview to do.
Okay.
About healthcare. So we're going to do that right now. Thank you guys all for watching. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. If you're new here, we do the show live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Remember, we won't be here tomorrow or Friday or Monday. We're taking a few days off. Natalie and I are traveling without the kids. So we're going to sleep in. Yes, exactly. We're going to put headphones on or earplugs so we can't hear anything.
Yeah. I was like, ooh, look, I'm going to bring these. Like I'm bringing drugs, but they're little tiny earplugs. Because you can't do that if you have kids, you know, sleep with earplugs. So I'm going to do that. It's probably, you know, I don't know if that's the safest thing to do, but
yeah,
we're doing it.
All right, everyone. Thank you guys so much for watching. We'll see you back here next week. And we've got content coming out throughout the week as well. Oh, by the way, tonight you have to subscribe. I've got a big video coming out tonight. And I've been picking these companies lately where we've seen a surge in prices, which is awesome. So many of you who've been paying attention have been making a boatload of money, which is fantastic. So I've got a video I'm producing a little bit later today. It's going to come out tonight or this afternoon on a company right now. And huge, huge profit potential. Like the one I told you about last week was up 33%. So hopefully you were able to pay attention to that one as well. 33% profits on that. So again, coming up later on the channel this evening, be sure to sign up and subscribe so you turn on the alert and you'll get that video a little bit later today.
All right. Everybody say goodbye to Philip. Thank you for standing in for David.
Always and happy to be
we
here.
We appreciate you.
And Grover, thanks you as well, everyone. We'll see you back here later. Peace out, everyone.